You're listening to AM 970, The Answer. And now, Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, the president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. My very special guest is State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Tom, welcome back to Reaching Out.
Greg, it's been a while. I'm glad to be back on your show.
Thank you for coming. And every time you come on our show, the listeners and myself learn a lot about the finances of New York State.
I hope so. Thanks.
So we want to begin with the Janus ruling by the Supreme Court of the United States. We know what it means to labor, but tell us what it means to the state.
Yeah. Well, it's such an important issue, and I commend you, your leadership of 237, and your work as one of the leading public sector union presidents that we have in our city and our state, because you've anticipated what was going to come down with this. And you have done a great job, and your team has done a great job of reminding your members how important it is to support the union. So from my perspective, I think the decision was wrong. Obviously, it was very much part of a political agenda to try to hurt the strength of public sector unions, which from my perspective means hurting working people, hurting families who depend on the strength that comes from the union movement. It's been a trend we've been seeing in state after state, and obviously from this national administration. And given the makeup of the Supreme Court right now, again, probably not a surprise. What it means for the state is that we certainly have to comply with the decision. And Certainly our office, as you know, we do the payroll for the state. So starting with the July pay periods, we are no longer going to be deducting the agency fee from non-union members, from the various public employee unions that are part of New York State and CUNY and SUNY as well, I should mention. So we have about 255,000 employees that we do the payroll for every 2 weeks. Of that number, approximately 31,000 are non-union members. So for those 31,000 workers, they will not see a deduction for the agency fee any longer. Again, it doesn't affect the state directly in terms of any impact on the state budget. What it affects is the money that would go into the respective unions. And depending on the union and the membership, it varies in terms of what percentage are unionized and what percentage are not. But what I've seen, with all the unions is a real stepped-up effort to remind their members how important it is to be in the union. And, we should clarify that even if you're a non-union member, you're no longer paying the agency fee. You're still part of the bargaining unit. And so the union will continue to, under the Taylor Law in New York, be recognized as the representative for the employees in that bargaining unit. So, there's a little bit of confusion out there about how dramatically this is going to impact. I mean, it's not helpful, not positive, but I think those that thought it was going to be the silver bullet to, turn around the tradition of public trade unionism in New York, I think they've been overstating the case.
Well, yes, and I wanted to give people something that they didn't think about. Now, you weaken the unions. That means going to the bargaining table, the unions are weaker, the raises are less, the benefits are less, and there's less disposable income for union members to buy goods. Then you start affecting companies, you're mm-hmm. affecting gas, you're affecting car sales because people keep their cars longer, mm-hmm. and it just goes on and on. So, we can't afford to buy that house, so we stay in an apartment. And it has a dramatic effect. And then there are investments that are made by unions, and then the companies that do investments, they no longer can get investments from the unions, and that hurts their bottom line and their businesses. And it just has a whole ripple effect that people didn't think about. You have prescriptions, yeah. optical, dental, all of these benefits that are attached, and all of these companies that are doing business.
They didn't come as of right.
No.
They came because they were collectively bargained for. And look, the middle class is strong in New York and in America because of the union movement. And it's no surprise that the middle class is feeling very threatened today. We see tremendous job growth, certainly in New York State, since the depths of the recession, but we do not see growth in household income. So there's a stagnation as far as the earning power of people. So, you know, the counterbalance, you know, the corporations still, by and large, are doing very well. Certainly the CEOs, when you look at, you know, how they report the salaries and the fringe benefits and the stock options of the corporate titans, they're doing very, very well. But the working people, not so much. So the counterbalance to that power really is the union movement. And New York still is the state with the highest percentage of unionized workers, private and public sector, of any state in the nation. But it doesn't mean that there aren't threats there. And even take it more close to home. So say you're an employee and you feel you've been discriminated against on the job or you've been treated unfairly for whatever reason. Who's going to speak up for you? And if you're just by yourself, you're not going to have the same ability to defend yourself if you don't have the union looking out for you. So making sure the union has the resources to do their job is what paying dues is all about. And there is no free ride. And you, as you point out, there are many reasons why we need the unions to continue to stay strong. And but I think, you know, again, hey, if this prompts a greater outreach on behalf of union leadership with rank and file members, I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, you do that every day anyway.
We do it every day anyway.
It doesn't mean that every union does it, you know, to the same degree. But I don't think there's anything wrong with unions stepping up the effort to explain to members, especially, you know, when new employees come on board. You know, especially now with Janice, the assumption is you're not a member until you join.
Right.
So is it bad that it's going to compel more of a dialogue and discussion about what we just talked about, the value and the purpose of unions? That's not necessarily a bad thing in the long term. And I, you know, I'll venture that when we look back on this a couple of years from now, we might even see union roles membership being higher than it is today.
Yes, we know in Wisconsin, the union membership in the public sectors went down 40%, and their wages, their bargaining power was stripped.
Yeah.
But you're going to start to see a turnaround because it hits bottom, then it starts coming back. And you could go too far, and people realize the value of unions. I want to say something you mentioned, if you don't have a union, there's no one to bargain for you, there's nobody to support you, and you're by yourself. Mm. I believe they made it impossible for ordinary citizens to get together to file a class action suit now.
Mm. Yeah,
I believe the courts came out with something that they're now allowing people to get together and file class action suits. So, I mean, it's really getting tough in this country.
It's a real trend, and you know, it's really assaults on what had been our normal process. I mean, you know, to come together. I mean, another example of it hasn't happened yet, but they're, and you can appreciate this from your role as a pension fund trustee, they're trying to curtail the ability of shareholders to bring shareholder resolutions. You know, so we've been very proactive, as you know, as the city funds have been as well, on a host of corporate governance issues. Well, they're talking about, you know, by law, reforming that system where you would significantly raise the threshold in terms of how much you would have to own in terms of stock in a company before you could bring a shareholder action. I mean, that's another way to chip away at the ability of people to be engaged in the system and to provide a counterbalance to the power structure, particularly the corporate power structure that we have in the state. So all of this issue of legal reform, reforming shareholder rights, attacking the unions through the Janus decision, it's just part of a larger agenda and a larger pattern that I think is at the very least troublesome. And unfortunately, in the current political climate, they've been effective.
Yes, they have. You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237. A very special guest is State Controller Tom DiNapoli. I want to ask you a question about the latest tax shift.
Mm.
I wouldn't say tax cut, tax shift in this nation.
Yeah.
The president just touted that he gave everyone a tax cut. But I think New Yorkers need to understand exactly what they got. Actually, they got a tax shaft. And I want you to explain to everyone the difference in this this coming tax season's filing.
Yeah,
because people are going to have a rude awakening and a shock.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many pieces of it. I mean, the biggest area of concern has been the cap on deductibility of state and local taxes, you know, which New York is a high tax state, no doubt about it. Property taxes, you know, you look at the suburbs around New York City, very high, and the combination of various state taxes. One of the pluses has been the ability to deduct those taxes. Now it's capped at $10,000. And you know, that's going to benefit states that have a lower cost of living, where an issue like this is not one that's of primary concern. So not being able to deduct that on your federal taxes or the limitation that's there, it's going to hurt many middle-income working families. You know, some are concerned, oh, the rich people are going to move because they may have to pay more in tax as well. You know, my experience is that the wealthy people tend to be able to survive almost no matter what, right? Maybe some people will look for a tax advantage in another state. But what about the middle-class family that doesn't have that second home in Florida that they could just change their legal address to, but barely holding on and been helped by that tax deductibility? Well, the capping at the federal level is really going to change that dynamic. The other piece of it long term, Greg, is that to pay for this, they're going to have to cut other federal programs. I mean, it's a massive shift. So it's not only an advantage tax-wise for states, not New York, not California, not Connecticut, not New Jersey, what a surprise, blue states by coincidence. So it's going to advantage many of the states in the South and the West. And you're going to see programs cut that certainly in New York we've benefited from. Take health care. You know, the Affordable Care Act, there's still serious efforts to really gut that program, if not roll it back completely. So between the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid, Medicare, we leverage billions of dollars coming into the state. Well, if they have to cut back on the health care programs, the entitlement programs, that's going to hurt New Yorkers. And there are many vulnerable New Yorkers who depend on those programs. And our state budget depends on that money and our city budget. You're familiar with Health and Hospitals
sure.
Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of financial issues. So if you start cutting, have major cutbacks, it's the providers, it's the hospitals that depend on that financing structure. So they're going to be hurt, not to mention some of the housing and education programs. So it is the impact of the shift or the shaft, as you point out, in the tax structure. It's also how they're going to pay for that long term. So either way, it's a bullseye on New York. You know, through this legislative session, the governor had some proposals. I don't know how well or widely they're going to be taken advantage of. One is to set up charitable trusts as a way to pay instead of property taxes because they could be deducted as a donation. Some questions as to whether or not the IRS is going to allow that to happen. And also changing from the income tax to a payroll tax, that's problematic as well. So I think in the short run, New Yorkers are going to get hurt by this. And it just adds to the burdens that are already out there.
Now, of course, it has been widely reported that the president, Donald Trump, is going down to Mar-a-Lago and he's around his friends. And he said, you know what, I just made you guys a lot of money. And they sit around and laugh.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the average person who voted for him and looking for change really didn't understand what he was all about.
Yeah.
And they're going to end up paying more in taxes.
Yeah. And probably, again, if their agenda to pay for this with federal budget cuts were to take place, not getting the services that they were getting. So, you're going to be squeezed in terms of being required to pay more. And then getting less out of the money that you send to Washington to begin with. And, you know, it's important to point out, New York is already disadvantaged. We are a net loser in terms of money we send to Washington. And some might argue, well, New York's a wealthy state. Of course, that's going to be the case. The problem is, even before the Trump presidency, the trend was going in the negative direction. We were losing even more money. The net balance had gone down even further. So we're going to continue to do reports that focus on that. You know, like what Senator Moynihan used to do.
Yes.
With how much money,
sure,
you know,
sure.
And we started doing that as well. And
can you give us an average?
For every dollar we sent, we did a report a couple of years ago. We got back like 91 cents, and then our updated number, I think it was like 85 cents now per dollar we were getting back. And most states, on average, were getting, for every dollar they sent, $1.14 back. So most states were getting back more.
They were getting our money.
And we were, exactly. That's another advantage of the shift, or the shaft. So it's a real problem. And that trend was happening even before Trump came in. And of course, like I said, New York may always send more than we get back because we're a wealthier state. But the trend should not be going in the negative direction. It should not be getting worse. Because, you know, while we have a number of wealthy people here, most people are not rich. I mean, this is a state of middle-class people and also a lot of poor people. And those are the people who are going to get hurt by this administration. And you touched on it. unfortunately, some of those folks voted for him. And I hope they have their eyes wide open to see now what they're actually getting.
Yeah, and the other states are not getting off either, because the tariffs that he just imposed, like on Harley-Davidson, American Company, and Jack Daniels, and American institutions.
Well, you see what's happening. You know, the countries that he's trying to push back or punish, whatever the right word is, they're being very selective, and they are putting their tariffs on products, as you point out, that affect, you know, the folks in Iowa, and, you know, so they looked at the map, who voted for him. And, I mean, what I find just strange, our closest friends are the ones that were undermining the relationship. This historic connection with Canada is being ruptured. I mean, why are we fighting with the Canadians? To talk about the European Union as, you know, our enemy? I mean,
wasn't the great question that was asked, didn't Canada burn down the White House in 1812?
Yeah. And hey, turns out they didn't.
Then I was wrong all these years.
So it takes fake news to a new to a new meeting. Right. But you know, it's a real concern. I mean, just look at Europe. I mean, America was the impetus post-World War II for creating Western Europe, and then with the demise of the Soviet Union, you know, to bring more and more countries into the fold with the EU. And now we treat, you know, Germany, France, I mean, England, he was just lecturing, you know, Theresa May. I mean, these are the people we need to work with. And I don't know if you want to go into the warm embrace of Putin, but
since we got it, I guess we can't get away from it.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard Anthony Scaramucci today on another station, and he was giving the host a lecture, and the host knew of the American institutions that were built after World War II. And the host just kept saying, you got to tell the president that, not me.
Yeah.
And he ignored that and kept going like he was the smartest guy on television. And I said, well, Anthony, maybe you should write the president a letter that he won't read.
Right.
And you should have told him that when you were there for 10 days. Yeah. You should have spent time lecturing him on why the institutions were set up. Now, of course, you know, I'm a union president. I'm not the president of the United States. But I do know enough to read.
Yeah.
I do know enough to get people around me and listen to them, because no one is born in the cocoon, the smartest person, without coming out and saying it. You know, without knowledge just comes to you. How does it come? Because I'm the smartest guy in the world.
Yeah.
Well, how do you become that way? Because I just am. That doesn't work.
No.
And the people listen to that. I just question them. I said,
well, I think that one good thing is you're seeing a number of Republicans now speak out. So it's not, you know, I think it's important for these issues not to become so partisan, which is kind of the climate we're in right now. But I was very heartened that a number of the Republicans really have been speaking out and standing up for our intelligence community and really trying to put some balance back in the conversation.
Well, but here's the odd thing. You and I are New Yorkers. We knew Donald Trump all of our lives. We saw the con job, simply the greatest con man that ever lived. And then he just switched parties and became a Republican. Prior to that, he was a Democrat. So here's a Democrat masquerading as a Republican, masquerading as a U.S. citizen.
We live in strange times.
Yeah. And people flock to it. But, you know, I always
But you know what? One of the pieces, Greg, if anybody thought elections didn't have a consequence, 2016 proves elections do matter. Huge differences.
It did, and it does.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And I won't forget what you said the last time you were here on Reaching Out. You said bad things happen when good people don't vote.
Wow, you remember that.
That's a lesson. On that day, I remember you said that.
Yeah,
bad things happen when good people don't vote.
Yeah.
And time again, we see it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about city and state finances.
Okay.
Where are we?
Pretty good shape.
Look,
the economy, certainly downstate, has been strong. New York City has benefited from not only Wall Street bouncing back, but the city's economy is much more diversified than it was a number of years ago. So you see certainly healthcare, but some newer areas of strong economic activity, hospitality, tourism. You know, these are the tech sector. Not just in Manhattan, but in Brooklyn and Queens as well. And a lot of those jobs are very high-paying jobs. So the city's revenues have been stronger. The city's financial plan, there are some out-year budget gaps, but they are manageable based on historic trends. The city, better than the state, has built up rainy day reserve accounts. But, you know, the city, like the state, is vulnerable if there is a significant downturn in the economy, or if these budget cuts come out of Washington. State picture is similar, Greg. We're actually seeing tax collections now. There was some volatility up and down last year, even part of this year, but now we're seeing so far in the fiscal year, we're ahead of projections, certainly ahead of last year, so that's good news. But the vulnerability there, again, is the economy, if there's a downturn, federal budget cuts, if they come to pass, and the state has not done as good a job building up our rainy day funds, our reserves. We haven't added to them since 2015. And also, the state is very highly indebted, so we don't have much wiggle room as far as debt capacity. So again, there's a vulnerability there. We put out our analysis raising these issues and pointing out that over the next few years, the state has cumulative budget gaps of close to $18 billion. Again, can be dealt with, but anybody who thinks that the good times are here forever, that there's unlimited amounts of money, no, I think going into the next budget year, we're going to have to be a little more conservative in our outlook as far as the revenues. That's going to impact on spending. And again, we're tied to what happens in Washington. We're tied to the overall economic trends, and we're not as well positioned as I wish we would be for that downturn, which will come at some point.
Now, let me ask you a question. I just wanted to ask. Yep. We're seeing what happens on a national stage, that you have someone that was never in the political arena, never wanted to read anything, never got involved. We're in trouble there. We see that. Even whether I'm Republican or Democrat, all the presidents of the United States, you really looked up to them because they knew what they were doing, and they studied and they listened and they were fit for the job. That could happen in the state. We could wake up. The way we're electing people and actors and actresses and whoever just jumps up. And 1 year we had Jimmy, and he said rent too damn high,
right,
and he got 1,000 votes.
Right.
So we can't start voting for ludicrousy because we're mad, because someone always told me things could get worse.
Yeah, you remember a few years ago when. Grandpa from the Munsters, Al Lewis, was running.
I remember when Al Lewis was running. And I thought Al Lewis, I used to see him at every high school basketball championship.
Oh, really?
He was a big high school basketball championship.
He's a great guy, yeah. A real character, but not ready to be governor. Although I think some of the things he said back then probably are still the issues today. I think didn't he talk about marijuana legalization?
Yes,
I think it was one of his big issues.
Well,
I mean, look, the good news is in America, it is an open system and anybody can put themselves forward, and that's great. The bad news is there's a lot of complexity to governing, and celebrity in and of itself certainly should not be the main qualification. And the real concern that I have is people not prepared, as you well point out, and also how partisan it's become. You know, the divide in the country, I mean, we've been through times of division before. That's not new. But it is so divided right now, and the inability to look for common ground, to try to find it, certainly is what typifies Washington. I don't think Albany is that bad. And I guess the city council, is very much dominated by one party. So it's more of the factions within that party that have to work through any differences. But in Albany, and it's an election year, and a little more of a split maybe right now. But traditionally, there has been an ability for the Republicans and the Senate and the Democrats in the Assembly to come together on the important issues. Not that there aren't some issues that don't get resolved. But Washington is a whole other picture. And there is not a sense of deliberation. There is not a sense of let's study the issue and see how we can get through this with everybody winning something. In Washington, it's winners and losers. And if you're not on my side, then you're not going to get anything out of it. And that is so corrosive to our system. And even the rhetoric that's out there, there's a lot about politics that turns people off. And so, to your point earlier, we used to look up to our leaders and those running, even if we didn't agree with them. And again, not that it was always perfect. Lord knows it wasn't. But now, if you're not on my side, I'll totally demean you. And sometimes, my own side could be guilty of that. I'm not saying one side has purity on that. That's wrong. I think part of it is the lack of thoughtful discussion in the media, the 24-hour, minute-to-minute news cycle, and social media, and people now getting their information from the source that's going to tell them what they want to hear, right? So in the old days, everybody saw Walter Cronkite or, Huntley Brinkley, whoever the newscasters were. We still had disagreements, but we seemed to have a common source of the data and the information. Now, you go to Fox News for one point of view, you go to CNN for another point of view. It's everything is in a sense so biased that we're talking in our own echo chambers. So when you run to somebody that has a different point of view, you can't agree because you can't even agree on the basic facts. There's something wrong with that. I don't know how you change it, but that's a real problem.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have.
We're going to have to do it again.
We'd have to do it again. If you want to do another take, we'll give you another take. This is Gregory Floyd reaching out. Once again, our special guest, Tom DiNapoli, New York State Comptroller. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks for listening to Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. Join us each and every Saturday night at 7, right here on AM 970, The Answer.